The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
What is that genre that just seems to be for everyone?
Why is the answer not fantasy and sci-fi? We can agree on that.
Sure.
It's
yes.
Definitely not our most read genre is for everyone.
3, 2, 1, thriller.
Children's fiction. We're about to have an interesting episode. What? Welcome back, everybody, to another Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
The genre for truly everyone. We have decided, you know what? We read our fantasy and sci-fi. We dabble into other stuff as well. But Rich and I wanted to find out what genre, both statistically and just what we feel as well, is for everyone. When somebody's writing a book and you know, hey, what's your target audience and demographic, all that kind of shebang, shebang, whatever. What one covers everybody?
What genre is hitting men and women like that close to 50-50? What's hitting every age demographic? What's hitting the, you know, the different racial demographic? Globally speaking, what is that genre that just seems to be for everyone? Bar none, any age, any creed. Any nationality, anything, anybody.
What is it?
I have the answer.
I do too.
Let's say it at the same time. Let's see if we can. So independent looking
at
numbers.
I don't know what your answer
things,
was.
I know. I don't know yours either. So
okay.
On one.
So wait, let me think of how I want to word the genre. One second. Okay.
It's one word.
Oh, hold on. Okay. I think so. I guess so. Mine might be multiple. Let's see.
Okay, you may be wrong. Okay,
no, you might be
on
wrong.
On one, like 3, 2, 1, hold. Say it.
Let
right?
me see how this clarified. Let me hold on a second. Now I'm getting like, what do you mean it's one? Isn't it two? Wait, we might have different answers.
Uh-oh. Hey, we're going to have some debate. I don't think there is debate, but we may have one.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, I got it.
So like 3, 2, 1, say it. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, thriller.
Children's fiction. We're about to have an interesting episode.
What?
Yeah, thriller. You know, that's interesting that you say thriller. Okay.
You're joshing me.
No, that's my answer.
You're yanking my chain.
That's the genre for everyone.
What? No.
Hold on now. Like, now we need to talk.
Factually incorrect?
No, we need to talk this out.
Okay, you know what?
Do you want to talk out my answer or your answer first, or what we found, or how we came to this conclusion?
You know what? You could start it off with that answer.
We'll
okay.
start there, I guess.
Sure. Like, why is children's fiction the genre for everyone?
Why are you looking at me like that? First of all,
it's children's fiction. It's in the word of the genre. It just because everyone could read it doesn't mean like does it prime is the demographics like yeah fairly equal spread. No, it's going to be like it is targeted toward children mostly, but other people can read it,
just like Pixar films.
Explain yourself.
So,
continue.
Here's the answer. Go. Right now I looked up these stats. This is from 2024. There was the total books sold according to this stat, and according to the statistics estimated provided by Romance Writers of America and others. So Of the 2.6 billion books sold, 1 billion of those was children's fiction, and that took up 39% of the chunk. And right after that was modern literary fiction with 16%, then kept on breaking down from there, right? That's just this one stat that I ended up finding. But something I was thinking back to when seeing what genre is truly for everyone, and what did one of the greats talk about? J.R.R. Tolkien. When we read his essay, his speech lecture turned essay on fairy stories of him defending fantasy, essentially, because there wasn't the name fantasy wasn't coined back then, so we called it On Fairy Stories. And in that, he was talking about how fantasy has this, it was categorized back then, and sometimes still is today, of, oh, that's for kids. You know, fantasy, that's for children. Why would adults ever read that fairy magic stuff? And in that, he was describing, as he'll put it, I quote Tolkien, he says, "If fairy story as a kind is worth reading at all, it is worthy to be written for and read by adults." So like The Hobbit, for example, being like that children's fiction type of story, where if you have something that, yes, it can be read and understood or appreciated by children, but then also there's something for adults to garner out of it, that breaks the age demographics. It breaks through different types of whether a reader. Here's the thing too, because it can't be, romance is so popular and incredible, everyone can relate to it, right? I'll read a romance, be like, you know, I'll watch a story and be moved to it because it's a romance. But I'm an adult who, you know, at a certain age,
romance is not like, only women read romance. No. It leans women, but it's not.
No,
it leans that way, but it doesn't dominate.
The age thing where if somebody, because, you know, you're not going to have a kid who's 10 years old. I mean, you could have the middle school flirt and things like that, but romance, there's more mature ways to have romance stories than your more coming of age romance story and so forth. But if we're talking about what can capture people, it's that like children's fiction for me an example I'll give movie wise is I think literally everybody in the entire universe, no exceptions, can watch and enjoy WALL-E. I think every single person in the entire universe can watch and enjoy Up, can watch and enjoy Ratatouille. All these stories that even the critics have to appreciate it. Even the audience has to appreciate it. Child, adult, and also it has what children's fiction does as well, that is the genre for truly everyone, is it has typically a theme that is so true and like admired and everybody agrees on the theme. So for example, the movie Coco is, you know, came out in 2017, one of the best Pixar films as well. Coco's theme of the story is just about family and the importance of memories. And it's like, of course, yeah. So it's going to break those barriers. It's going to break through culture as well. It breaks the barrier of culture. It breaks the barrier of age. Breaks the barriers of sex. All that stuff. Children's fiction. That's my answer. Why are you wrong, Rich?
I hate that you're starting to convince me a little bit. So I want to like...
Come on, children's fiction! Come on!
Devil's advocate. I'm going to push back here and say that we were talking about maybe different things.
Yes.
There's the genre that maybe, and I know how this sounds coming out of my mouth.
Oh God,
I get it. But the genre that appeals to lowest common denominator in the sense of you simplify the message, you hit for, because it's for children up, and like, so you take out complexity, you take out these things. I know what I'm saying. I know. I'm trying to make an argument. Bear with me. Shut up. Down below, shut up. I already know. But
I like that you didn't say shut up to me this time. I
know.
It's coming. It's coming soon. Yeah.
But there's a difference of like the genre that can appeal to everyone, which I would tend to agree with you. Of if you're trying to hit the, what is a genre that is most malleable and has the potential to hit every demographic? Children's fiction is a correct answer to that question. However, if you're ask the question of who most watches children's fiction? Children, like younger adults. So like there is a disproportion, there is a disparity in that, in the demographics. That is the point that I'm getting at. Just because adults are watching children's fiction, is it a fairly equal distribution? No.
I would say
that is my pushback to you of like why
good pushback.
That, it
good
works pushback. Well of like you're hitting lowest common denominator of like the demographic that will be hardest to include through everything is children. So children and above. Like I get that's the strategy.
Okay.
But the distribution is off.
Now, I don't know. I'm going to look up a stat when you start going for distribution. I'm actually curious what it is, but I'd imagine, you know, when going to watch a Pixar movie, like the adults are bringing the kids, you know? Sure. So when it comes to the actual who's watching it or enjoying the story, and that's why I love the Tolkien quote of, you know, if fairy story as a kind is worth reading at all, it is worthy to be written for and read by adults. In the same way of when I'm watching WALL-E as a kid or I'm watching Emperor's New Groove as a kid, I'm laughing and going, this is a great story. Then as an adult, I'm watching it. And I'm getting more out of it because the writers of the children's fiction are adults, right? So they're writing something that they want children to appreciate, but they also know that the parents are going to be there watching the movie with the kids, and they don't want like the parents going to, oh, I guess I got to go show them another Cocoa Melon. But it's not like the bad children's stuff is literally, I mean, Cocoa Melon, I don't know it enough, but it's just flashy and it's whatever.
The bad children's fiction only appeals to children.
Only appeals to children, right?
Great children's fiction appeals to both children and adults, and it's also just pure marketing strategy of children cannot buy the ticket themselves.
They cannot,
You got to also entice the parent of the parent has to go like, this was an enjoyable time with my kids.
Yes.
If they're
I will see another Pixar movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds good.
No,
that's why I think it breaks that barrier in with that. But I think when we're going through all the kind of story beats, right, of like what's needed, I think it touches on the right, with children's fiction, it touches on the right length as well. That's for everybody because typically it's shorter. Whether it's a movie or a book, it's going to be like that. I mean, look at, literary-wise, we look at The Hobbit as a story that could be read from all generations. Or, I mean, even Narnia, or you take some of those more classic ones, Alice in Wonderland, a lot of those types of stories that are, or take any of the literally, the fairy tales that were much darker in the back, you look at especially Germany and all the dark fairy tales they had, that are now, you know, Cinderella, and these ones that lean into a certain genre such as romance or coming of age. They pick something that like what's the actual trope, what's the actual story type, but it's still going back to that base instinct of, hey, the children and the adults can love this, and that's why that's the correct answer. I think
your answer is like what genre can appeal to everyone.
Okay.
I think that is a correct answer to take it.
Fair enough. All right.
I was looking at like, hey, what genre has a fairly equal distribution across many different cultures, sex, and age? Those are the kind of three I was looking for. Gotcha. What has a place and through slight twisting can appeal to everyone?
So your answer is thriller.
Thriller.
Before we give your full answer, just a quick break from our sponsor, Into the AM. Thank you so much, Into the AM, for sponsoring this. Quick ad break from our sponsor, Into the AM. And this is genuine. We just had this conversation before starting this ad. We were saying we have our own merch with Tudor Ramble, where we have our hats and whatnot and all that stuff. We want whatever sourcing Into the AM uses, we genuinely want to use whatever they do, because these shirts, I want our merch using the same clothing they use, because one, Into the AM, like the shirts are legitimately comfy, and then on top of that, look, very freaking cool designs from the artists at Into the AM.
Designs are really well done, how it feels, and often like designs can be a little itchy in how they're printed. This feels very comfortable, very integrated, but the shirt itself, comfortable. They have great in-house designs. They also have, I know we're showing the big designs, but they also have just very simple, subtle, like single color shirts. If you just want high quality shirts and you don't really want a lot of logos or any kind of imaging, they also have that too, which I use. I like them. So,
hey, who's going to trust a podcast for what they say? They're getting sponsored by this brand. If you go purchase one and wear it, you go, huh?
They weren't wrong.
They weren't wrong. They might have been paid for it, but they're saying the truth. So
that's the important part.
That's the important part. All right. So look, Into the AM, like we were very, very into their sponsoring us, but genuinely love their shirts. And so thank you for sponsoring us. If you want a discount, it's 10% off if you use code RAMBLE at checkout and go to intotheam.com/ramble. It will be in the link in the description below. Again, that is code RAMBLE for 10% off. And look.
Hey, and Into the AM, if you're watching this advert during the video.
Yeah.
Please read, like, understand, we want our merch on your shirts.
I could just email them.
I forgot that that's a possibility. We don't have to exist as parasocial. Like, nah.
What is that? What was...
I'm speaking through video. I don't use the email. You use the email. I don't email them. You email them.
See you in the episode. We're back. I wanted to do that because I knew Rich. We would have rambled and forgot about our sponsor.
True.
Into the AM. Thank you again.
Go buy a soft, nice, comfortable shirt. And now you're here.
Now you're here. Look at that. Yes.
Into the AM is pretty awesome. Anyway.
So Thriller's the one you came to. I'm curious why and what is it about Thrillers that's so appealing?
So already, everyone, yes. as far as numbers go, when you look at different lists of most popular genres, by far currently today, the dominant genre is romance. Now, romance, just by numbers, I couldn't really put as like the genre for everyone because it leans younger. It leans so younger demographics generally, and leans women versus men. That is where it generally leads. There is more
did
of a
did
global,
you end up finding what is the age group typically for men? Did you find any of that when you were looking into it?
Yes. Basically, it was fairly young, like teens all the way up to, I believe, like, if it was 35 was the general distribution. It can go older, mm-hmm. but that was like the
largest
demographic.
Percentage.
That was
yeah.
the largest percentage, the block, okay. which is a large block, is the reason why it's the mm-hmm. dominant genre in books today. However, consistently across different lists, one of either number two or number three was thrillers. Thrillers hits a certain demographic of, we are always in sci-fi fantasy. That already is a niche. So we're dealing
That's
with
not
much
for
shorter.
Everyone.
It's not for everyone.
Our genre, certainly not.
No.
Yeah.
Thrillers, on the other hand, are very often, like, it's never beating romance, but it is often coming in second of most purchased genre. And it hits pretty dead even, 50% women, 50% men. It appeals to both sexes. It appeals to age demographics. There are different different types of thrillers. And so depending on how you twist it, there's a thriller for every age demographic. So it appeals to a lot older people and younger and all in between. So age demographic, it's all across the board. Depending on how it's not, the whole genre is not locked to a certain age. So that it, very much open wide. You add on to there is thrillers in just about every culture. You take a different twist and flavor on it. Now, most numbers for United States, and looking this up, it's going to be dominated by the United States and Europe, but that's just because English, I'm looking up at English-speaking books. However, looking further into it, different cultures will have thrillers. Thrillers is a very common genre across cultures. It's very applicable.
What is it about thrillers that's so innate to make people want to read it?
I think it's just one of the base. It's a very basic genre in the sense of you have a character put into a harrowing situation, and it generally is very tense. You can make it fairly short. So generally, thriller is going to be in our world, of course. And so it's a familiar world. You don't need to create something new. Normally the situations are very either relatable or understandable. And so I think that works really well. Now, alongside thrillers, thriller, I think, is the wider umbrella. But you could, if I wanted to add in another genre that kind of also mostly works for every demographic, it's also mysteries. Sometimes books will wear two hats, like thriller, mystery. Mm-hmm, they'll often sure. be together. But thriller in general. It seems to be like there can
it's
be a thriller for kids,
almost
thriller
go,
for older people.
Yeah.
Like personally, like one of my favorite books I keep thinking about all the time is Norwegian by Night. It's an example of it's a thriller novel that features a 91-year-old man. And like that's the feature. And I think it very much appeals to an older demographic. And damn, it fucking slaps. It's so good. It's a book, I think, for everybody.
It's funny. If I had to have a second answer, I might go mystery as the next answer because maybe here's the thing against the person who wouldn't like a thriller. you know, obviously a genre that's not for everyone is horror. Mm-hmm. Certainly not. I guess what is the, so because people don't want to read or watch stuff to get scared or whatever, that emotion, like, everyone has that base fears. Everyone fears something, but that doesn't mean you want to read that or your escape is not going to be more horror.
Yeah.
For some people. I mean, a lot of people will think that. Now, is that the case for thrillers at all? The people that they don't, their escape is they don't want to feel like that, maybe anxious is the word or whatever, that innate emotion that thrill gives you. Of there's people who don't like roller coasters, even though that's a thrill. Right?
Sure.
So, like, what about that reader? I guess, tell me why there's not a large exception.
Now, here's the thing. We're both asking, I think, different questions, but they're both valid interpretations of our quest.
Yes.
What is the genre for everyone? Of, like, what is the genre that, like, you answered the question of what genre can appeal to everyone? Of, like, has the most, like, cast the widest net of, like, you're probably going to catch you do it just right, you're going to catch just about everyone. However, you are going to lean certain direction. Thriller tends to be like, yeah, you're going to leave some people just don't like thriller. But it's not for everyone. It isn't, but that's the thing. It hits almost every demographic. And that's how I was looking at it.
I see how you're looking at the question. Okay.
I'm trying to find the neutral genre.
Got it.
If I were to hand the publisher a thriller, they would go like, okay, they're not going to zero in on any particular demographic. There's not a way of like, oh yeah, thrillers appeal. So we're going to mostly appeal to men, or oh, we're going to mostly appeal to women. Marketing can be very open. They can appeal to every age group, every sex, all this stuff. Like that was how I was thinking of it. Of basically neutral. Trying to be neutral in its demographics. That's what I was looking for.
Okay.
I understand your point of like those are two different.
Okay, I understand.
So two different approaches.
With a thriller of, I see what you mean. So with a thriller, you're saying that anybody, you know, whether you're a child, whether you're an adult, old person, like that, there's a. Is that the case though? Is there a thriller? Is there, just like you said with romance of a certain age group? Is that the case with thriller of the stats on that are widespread?
Yes.
As much.
Now here's the thing. If you want to be anal about it, and
yeah.
Welcome to.
Hey, I'm good at that. Yeah.
if you were going to target a thriller toward any demographic specifically, you would have older adult thriller. Okay. Young adult thriller. There is young, like, children thriller. Like, sure. maybe you wouldn't call it exactly thriller, but it is basically a children's thriller story. It's an adventure. Like, that's generally
what's an example thriller you would say is for everyone? You know what I mean? Because we're saying the genre for truly everyone. This is a thriller that everyone could read. But again, maybe you're answering it different because you're taking the question of this is a thriller that not everyone can read, but it would be like a demographically even.
I'm trying to find the genre that doesn't really lean to any one demographic specifically.
Okay.
That's what I was looking, because almost every other, you know, sci-fi leans men, fantasy.
I think it's actually one of the very few that does, though, because most readers are women.
Yeah, fantasy leans women. But no, I mean, a lot of genres, there are plenty of genres that lean men, women, like even things like mysteries, I believe, women.
That's what the ones that I looked at, too, was like there's hardly any, if you just do numbers-wise, like look at the numbers, pretty much every genre leans women.
Oh yeah,
just because of the fact that there's such a larger pool.
You have to look at though per capita though.
Well, even
like
that, well,
the total number of like if you
well half the people in the world are women, you know, like so it's similar per capita.
Yeah,
it's just in general like the readers are going to be women in general.
Yeah.
Now, for example, I have a question on this. So, why didn't you pick mystery? Because if I could pick a second answer, I would go mystery as for everyone before thriller. I think what leaned you against that?
Oh, I just picked the slightly bigger umbrella.
Okay.
I would say mystery very often falls under the thriller umbrella, thriller being a little bit larger.
Interesting. I might reverse that, but still with the, so the thriller. Did you give an example? Yeah, I'm sorry if I what's something that would work?
Like a book series that appeals basically, like, here's an author that I believe appeals to every genre, and I think a good example is Dan Brown. Dan Brown has thriller books for every age demographic, and that he writes thriller and thriller mysteries. But he has a series that will appeal to an older demographic, a middle age, very young adult.
We totally answered a different question because I'm thinking like when you say it's for older, it's for younger, I'm like, well, then it's not for everyone.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't the title literally the genre for truly everyone?
That's what I'm saying. Thrillers are for every age demographic. They are for every sex, every nationality, culture. There doesn't seem to be a leaning of, oh, mostly women read thriller. Oh, thriller is mostly for older people, or it's mostly for younger people. That is what I was trying to find. Well, you found the lowest common denominator. I know how it sounds. I get it. I'm trying to explain it away of like the catch-all. Like, yeah. You get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I get what you mean. Now, question on this then, of we can loop back to...
I'm throwing a net and I'm trying to get an equal distribution of fish. And you're going, I'm going to throw the net with... I want all of the fish. And so like, I don't care if there's more carp in here. I just want...
I want the carp, I want the minnow, I want the pike, I want...
I'm throwing a net with, like, trying to get the equal distribution, and you're throwing the net with the smallest holes possible, so you catch every single fish.
For everyone, yeah, all the fish.
All the fish.
Yes.
But you're gonna get more of one fish than another. That's the difference.
No, what do you mean more than one fish?
There's not an equal distribution of fish. Do you get what I understand? Do you get what I mean? I'm trying to say.
Well, the way I'm, let's say there's 8 billion fish.
Okay.
I'm saying like I want all 8 billion fish. That's all I'm saying. But I do get what you mean with like I get how you answered the question. But my question on this of why is the answer not fantasy and sci-fi? We can agree on that.
Sure.
It's definitely not our most read genre is for everyone.
No. God,
there's a lot of reasons, right?
List of reasons. Yeah. Right off the bat, numbers wise, sci-fi leans. It's not a dramatic leaning, but it is it leans men. So men, mostly read sci-fi, less women. At one point in time, and not that long ago, fantasy used to be mostly read by men. It is now. Lean slightly women for fantasy.
Do you know the stat on it by chance? Or I can look up something quickly.
You could look it up, but I was looking across a bunch of different sites, and so I apologize for not writing them all down. I was just trying to get an aggregate understanding.
Yes.
Now, unfortunately, looking through it, it's like how much is... So it's... Do you include romanticy in the full fantasy genre? That certain... Yes, it is fantasy, but it is its own subgenre with the addition
they're
of romanticy.
It's slight lean. It's almost evenly matched with fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I'm seeing on a quick glance. But yeah.
Now, how much did romanticy shift that particular genre over?
I see what you mean. But with
it's a fair point. It's a subgenre that has brought more women to the wider genre.
But with fantasy, because the way I'm looking at that question of why, like, your dad would never read fantasy. Or typically does not.
Unless I tell him to.
Unless you tell him to, right? Yes. Like there's a person that will hear fantasy and go, not for me.
Yeah.
People will not read. That's how I was also taking the question of why is that not for everyone? Because you could argue with fantasy if you're just trying to get demographically like the right person. For the way you took the question, fantasy is more for everyone in the sense that like you have like a almost even split. Men and women, you have all different ages that read fantasy as well. Like there's adult fantasy in this. So I think your question could like a lot of genres would match that more. Like at least it would lean a bit more in that definition. But
age
with,
demographic, it doesn't. It's far
a little bit more.
It is
far
more the young. Like it is for children, young adults, and
I could see that.
It's heavy drop off when you get to. Adults and the elderly.
I could see that.
That's where I was like, I couldn't really include it because it's such a heavy drop off from adults.
But with what would people have an aversion to fantasy and sci-fi in general? What would they? Why would that not be somebody something that they would approach in general?
I mean,
like, you know, you hand this, you hand this to a publisher, they're going, hey, I'm trying to reach these people who are fans of, you know.
I mean, you ask people that say they don't read fantasy or fantasy doesn't appeal to them, in general, they'll say, well, it's not realistic. That'll often be the answer. And people want to read realism. Yeah. We've read so many different essays at this point, Ursula K. Le Guin's essay on
why Americans fear dragons. Yep.
Yep. Which I thought was very insightful of mainly specifically Americans' culture on, you know, basically at the time, and I think it's still applicable now, the hustle culture of why do people keep wanting, they feel like if they're going to read something, they want to either learn or feel like they have.
She was specifically saying something. Like the men as well. Why aren't men reading fantasy? Was her, and she was saying this back in like the 70s is when that came out as well.
Yeah, and there's a sense, especially then, there's a sense of
fiction, I should say. Yeah.
Like, oh, you're wasting your time doing it. That reading should either...
The grind set.
Yeah, you're affecting the grind, and you're wasting time. Like, no. I think that's a big reason. Mm-hmm. There is also still just the sense, you know, how Tolkien put it, of, like, people see it as a thing for children. And so people will feel this aversion to, like, oh, I don't want to be seen as a child, and so... They won't read it. Mm. But often, I think a lot of it is, there's a difficulty. I think there's a difficulty in suspending your disbelief to that point. We don't at this point. Like, I think anyone watching this channel, especially, you don't have a problem suspending your disbelief. But I think that's actually a skill that has to be developed. And that children quickly develop it, and adults can very easily lose it. I know
that's a great answer. I think that you got to the crux of it there.
I know when talking with my dad about different stories, a focus in his mind is that realistic? That's a that's a constant question through every book that we ever talk about together. Mm. And to him, realism is good. And so books that are real make it good. And so if something is unrealistic, that's a constant question for independent of genre. That's just how he feels about it. And it's why we can very much enjoy Andy Weir's sci-fi series. He enjoys the realism of it. There is the little bit of, you know, you have to suspend your disbelief a bit. But
not as much, you know?
Not as much.
Maybe it's something why, like, Jurassic Park can get more wilder appeal. It's a little bit of science. It's just going, hey, DNA technology, just push it a little bit. Like, even we've seen it literally with animals now of bringing back not werewolves. What the heck am I looking for? Direwolves, right?
Direwolves, yeah.
Woolly mammoths are potentially too. It's just a little bit of science, and then people can suspend their disbelief more easily.
Yeah.
That is a general aversion to sci-fi fantasy.
That's why I'm saying thriller. Thriller, you don't have to suspend your disbelief at all. That, very often, a thriller can basically be like, the news can often be like, have a story that's like, that's a good thriller story right there, and that was on the news. So it very much can feel like it's real.
Now, is a thriller story like exciting, fast-paced? Like, what makes up a thriller story? What does it have to be a thriller?
Oh, generally, character in a general tense situation, and they normally are, you know, they're either trying to it's normally a story of survival or escape or something along those lines, maybe not even just physical survival, but mental. That is generally it. You can also throw it, adventure can often be a thriller, but maybe it's kind of different. It's a very wide umbrella, though.
Okay.
But it's normally high tension, high anxiety, often chases. If you read a Dan Brown book, it's about, you know, the chase. Someone's after you, and you have to solve, you know, if it's a thriller mystery, you have to solve the mystery before the bad guys get you. That's a lot of books right there. It's like,
gotcha.
Solve the crime before the criminal gets you.
Mm-hmm.
Thriller.
Got it. Now with that, I have a question on tropes of bonus question, basically.
Okay.
What's the trope for everyone? Because I think we're disagreeing on the question being asked in this episode.
Sure.
We got to move, let's agree on the question for the trope, right?
All
right. The question for the trope is, what trope what trope could be truly for everyone of you hear that trope and people want to go, oh, I don't want to read that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Of like the trope is introduced and it's everybody's like, oh, I'm interested. Okay, tell me more. That kind of trope in the story. What is
answering it your way rather than my way.
Yeah. We can answer your way both. Second. Yeah. We'll do your second.
Well,
but yeah.
To answer my way, I think you'd have to actually look at the numbers. We can make a guess, but
sure. But how would you answer, like, hey, someone hears that trope. Okay, I'm interested. Or tell me more. What is the universal trope? You know, what is the
underdog?
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. That might be it.
You know what I mean? How many times has someone said, like, yeah, I really don't want to read an underdog story? Come on.
Is that the answer?
Like, the only person I can think of going, like, I don't want to read an underdog story is, like, the voracious reader that has just read so much, so many underdog stories. They're like, okay, I need a breather. Like,
Means they've read a lot of them.
They've read a lot of them. That's, yeah.
So they're already in.
They're already in. It's like, I need a break.
Yeah.
Not, I never want to read it again.
Underdog, that might cover it. I can't think of a single person. Because we can all, it's all that human emotion. We can all relate to being an underdog at one point. Yeah. Even like the wealthiest, well-off, everybody person in the world.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. The wealthy person desperately wants to be an underdog. Exactly. That is a sense of deep insecurity.
Everyone needs to feel as if they have, like, they have an obstacle.
Oh, yeah.
That there's something to surmount.
Well, how many people in our very soft Western lives of everyone wants to pretend to be the underdog, even when they're not. And that so many people want to say, like, you know, lament about their struggles, and it's like, come on.
my co-host, like, he bullies me, and it's like, I don't feel comfortable, and it's just like, I try to explain myself, and it's just like a whole thing. And then I go in the mirror and tell myself, like, you got this. Yeah. You got this. You're the underdog. Commenters are gonna not hate your book take as much. This is the episode where you give a review and they're not gonna flame you. You know, I'm like, you got this, buddy. Everyone wants to be an underdog. Yeah.
I think it's honestly a sad and potentially hopeful and joyful moment. Like, there's a mixed emotions there when you look in the mirror and realize that you're not the underdog. That's a moment in your life of going,
my God,
like,
that's a great that's a great story.
Yeah.
What about, I mean, I know there's stories, there's not, like, a story that's not just the underdog, but what about the character who is starts off, they're not the underdog anymore, and what's their identity?
Yeah.
And that could be an interesting story.
Now you go even further of realize, like, I think most children would like to believe, like, I think most people grow up thinking they're the underdog, whether they are or not. And at some point, I think it's important for every person to, like, self-reflect. Was I ever the underdog? Was I never the underdog? That's a hard question to ask yourself. But yeah. I think it comes down to a, like, universal truth of everyone wants to be the underdog. No one really likes being, like, oh yeah, just the expectations of, like, oh yeah, no, they're on top. They will be. They didn't overcome anything.
Literally every human can relate to struggle.
Yeah.
So,
do you have a different answer than me?
That's the answer. Okay. I think that's the answer. If we combine children's fiction, underdog story, we cover everyone. Everybody.
I mean, true. I'm thinking of, like, would Percy Jackson count as an underdog story? I think at one point
book one, I guess, you know, he's not a demigod and he's like this troubled kid.
Yeah.
He's a troubled kid. And, you know, the first chapter that opens up with him on the bus, you know, on the bus getting called out, and he has this bully. There's that twerp of that twerp kid in his class who he hates. And then, he also has a single mom. He doesn't know who his dad is.
Yeah.
Then he finds out his dad's Poseidon.
But he's an outsider.
So, you know, yeah, it's there.
I do think that is one of the more annoying combinations of genre and trope that I don't like is your self insert type that doesn't work well for me. Of, like, I think it's very cheap, popcornish kind of entertainment that I think could use evolution. And like, it's, to me, I just find it a little bit more lazy.
What's that?
Of you combine the underdog story that really isn't an underdog. Typically, this is in like children's fiction or like your self-insert, like adventure type. But a character that is presented as and believes themselves to be the underdog, yet due to the circumstances of the story, the plot is making like they're clearly not the underdog. They have all of these like gifts, abilities, powers, friends, all this stuff. It's like, they're not the underdog. Stop trying to pretend they are. That's an annoying feature to me.
Is that your... So I think this book does a good job at making at least the... There's clearly plot struggles, and clearly the character is... horrible things happen to the character, but a book we just read, Ironbound, by Andrew Givler, where it's, you know, the character's got badass powers.
Yeah.
And they're able to succeed quite a bit. However, obviously, circumstances being... surrounding stuff was bad to them. And there are moments where there's a failure, right? There, and yes, that actually happens and doesn't get everything you want. But that type of story done more poorly is what you're talking about.
Exactly.
These are a very easy way to mess that up. Yeah.
The bad turn of it, like take that close to the same story of Ironbound.
That progression fantasy type, yeah.
But with if the author, Andrew, wanted to make the main character an underdog, I think the story would fail. But he doesn't. It's deliberately like, hey, this character's not the underdog.
They're progressing. Fantasy,
they have different faults, different problems. But in many ways, they have to grapple with the fact that they aren't the underdog. Mm. There's consequences to being in their position without giving anything else away.
Now, something we can give away more, like Avatar The Last Airbender, it's interesting because we're following the Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
The Avatar should have mastered all four elements, right? We get Aang's perspective when he is the underdog compared to the Fire Nation.
Yeah.
It seems insurmountable because he's coming out of this 100 years of being in ice and only has one element.
Well, that I love that playing with macro and micro perspective of macro, he is the underdog. Micro, he doesn't feel like he's the underdog because he's burdened with a sense of a lot of responsibility. The world is on his shoulders because I'm the Avatar. This shouldn't be like, I am not the underdog. I am literally the most powerful.
But
the most potential.
Failed everybody.
And he fails. That is the burden of being the top dog, but in macro sense, no, he is the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun play.
It's very fun. Very
macro
fun play.
Macro and micro.
Yes. You all let us know if there's anything we miss as far as a trope for everyone, but also a genre for everyone, taking it whichever question you want, whichever way we took the question. Also, check out our book club on our Patreon where we do a book club every single month. This month is Assassin's Apprentice by Robin Hobb, and that video reveal will be out soon enough as well by the time this video is up. But Rich, anything else to end with?
Check out Into the AM. They've been real nice to us. They got good stuff. Go ahead, get a shirt. Get some pants. They're awesome.
Code Ramble, remember. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.